See, the more empathetic characters in the crowd were a little worried about Tara Anderson sitting quietly by herself to the far right, as if we had forgotten about her. She is actually going to speak to us about another issue near and dear to our hearts, employee advocacy, developing strategies to educate our employees to become better ambassadors for our trade, for our segment. Tara brings a wealth of experience to her current role as Director of External Mobilization at the American Petroleum Institute. 10 years in public policy, she was a constituent services representative for the United States Senator Gordon Smith, and after that spent some time with Legislative Strategies Group along with Deere & Company. With that, Tara, I'll turn the podium over to you.
Okay. I hate PowerPoint. Dirty little secret. Speakers are never supposed to say that, so forgive me if I'm slow or if I don't quite get how this works, but I promise that I'll do my best. So, as was mentioned, I've been involved in public affairs for over a decade. I'm originally from the West Coast, but moved out to D.C. 13 years ago. I'm aging myself a bit. But I originally moved out to work for the United States Senate and fell in love with D.C. and never left. So while I have a variety of different positions that I've held over the past 13 years, they've all been involved in government and public affairs. And most recently, I was at the National Association of Manufacturers for 8 years as their director of public affairs. So I feel like I'm a bit of an expert in advocacy, although there's so much to learn and do every single day that I'm still a work in progress. So the best thing about my time in D.C. with my various positions, especially my time at the NAM, is that I am a fierce advocate for employee engagement, mobilization, and advocacy in general. So I'd like to share with you a little bit about what we're doing at API through one of our advocacy portals, which is Energy Nation, which is the voice of the industry, what we're doing, how we're doing it, and hopefully how we can be of assistance to you all. Please forgive me if this is a bit elementary. We'll go over kind of the basics of advocacy for those of you who may not already have your own programs. But I'd really like to just kind of breeze through everything and open it up to Q&A to see how I may be of a resource to you all. So again, today we're going to talk about the importance of employee advocacy, the benefits it can bring both to your own company structure as well as the lives of your employees, exactly what you need to do to create or strengthen your existing employee advocacy program, and how with just a little bit of an investment, you can begin to build this program that will reap long-lasting value with your company and with your employees. So basically, employees are the best brand ambassadors you can come by. You know, every employee has pride in the work that they do, and they're willing to speak up and share this with the public and people in the communities. When a company is successful, when it does well, there's trickle down. Company's profits are good, you get a bonus. Your salary increases. So they have a vested interest in how your company succeeds. Often they just need the opportunity to speak up. They need a portal to show this pride, to become involved, to cast a vote. They are actually can do more for your company brand than any ad campaign. So naturally, luckily, we don't have to recreate the wheel here. Often a successful advocacy program is a natural extension of your existing internal communications. By using your employee communications channels, newsletters, intranet, blog, social media, etc., you can begin to build an advocacy program. And as you'll see, the more opportunities, the varied opportunities that your employees are given to act, the more involved that they'll be. So here's just a quote from a sitting member of Congress here from Texas about the importance of advocacy and getting your employees involved. Regardless of the issue that you asked employees to act upon or exactly how an employee mobilizes, the process of an employee learning about an issue, getting excited, taking an action, whether it's signing a petition, whether it's writing a letter to a member of Congress, whether it's getting registered to vote, this process, you begin to recognize the deeper connection between the employee and between the company. So you can see that the benefits of employee engagement are twofold. You're creating better messengers. People take pride in their work, and advocacy gives them the opportunity to speak up about what they do and why they're proud of it. And it creates better results. Elected officials see the real value in being persuaded by a constituent, a real person, rather than a lobbyist. I saw this when I was a staff member on Capitol Hill, and I saw this when I worked at the NAM. Often, you know, members of Congress are visited by high-powered, high-paid lobbyists every single day. And while sometimes that's very important, at the same time, they want to know how it's affecting Joe Lineworker, a constituent in their hometown. So, what's the point? Quite simply, the point is to create a reliable and active group of employees who can best position your company with elected officials. These are the best kind of lobbyists because no one can dispute their intentions. So, all right. As you're building a program, the most important principle to remember is to create a culture of advocacy. This is really a community that regularly communicates and engages employees in the political process. It gives them all the necessary tools and empowers them to get involved and to make a difference. This will include basic education on an issue, what it is and how it affects them, how it affects your company's bottom line. You're constantly sharing information with them. You're giving them opportunities to get involved. You're updating them with information and sharing best practices for outreach and engagement. All right. So we all recognize the importance. Now what? Three basic steps to creating an advocacy program, REM. Recruit, engage, and mobilize. So recruiting. Remember, not everyone in your company is going to give a damn. Not everyone's going to want to get involved and engaged. But a lot of people are. You just have to give them an opportunity. I found in my background, usually, when you can point out to an employee, a line worker, whoever it may be, exactly how a piece of legislation can impact their pocketbook, people get excited, they get incensed, and they get involved. Make it personal. This affects you how? Give people the opportunity to learn more and get involved if they so choose to. If this issue doesn't impact them, maybe the next one will. You never know. So we're beginning the recruiting process with a simple ask. Hey, here's an issue. Here's how it'll affect you. Sign this petition. You know, write your member of Congress about this. Again, you never know what's going to bite. So your responses to this initial ask give you your initial audience. So then we move on to the engage portion. Once you find out this group, this core group of employees that wants to be involved, then you know what you've got to work with, and you can work off them and figure out who's going to become more involved. Again, they may bite at first, but, you know, the engagement may not go any further, but you never know when it will next time. You have that initial engagement, and that's sometimes all you get, but it can be important. So then we're looking to mobilize. You got to ask for something. Make it simple. Here's an issue. Here's what we need to do. A lot of times, again, they won't get involved to begin with, but you've already created that relationship. You never know when they're going to move. So this can be, again, asking them to sign a petition, contact their member of Congress, or even get involved on social networks about this issue with their friends, both within the company and outside. All right. Oops, just kidding. Okay. So, to break it down, first step is recruiting. Recognize that your employees are passionate, credible voices within your company. Use them. Just don't abuse them. People are dying for the opportunity to speak up and be heard and be part of a community. Take advantage of that. You know, again, it's not manipulating them. It's giving them an opportunity to join this community, to be someone, and to speak up. And that sometimes is very important to individuals. Elected officials and community leaders deal with paid-for consultants all the time, and they receive thousands of form letters. I remember working in the Senate, and literally thousands a day, the identical postcard. But when it's a personal letter, even if the basic message is very the same, but it's got a personal note on it, that means a lot. So give your employees a form letter that they can tailor with a sentence or two to make it a personal note. It's very important. By finding these genuinely dedicated advocates in your organization, it will set you apart from anyone else. And there's a lot of people out there fighting for legislators' attentions. So as part of the recruiting process, remember that employees trust their employers for information. When the company does well, they do well. And studies have shown time and time again that employees look at their employer for basic background on legislation and how it affects them. So this doesn't mean that you have to tell your employees, vote for this, or write your member of Congress and ask them for this. Give them the basic information. Again, if the company does well, they're going to recognize that they're going to do well. And they will most likely vote or ask a legislator to vote for the position that benefits your company. So you need to predict. You need to look at your internal company calendar, what's going on in your own company, what's going on in the industry, and time these appropriately. At the same time, look at a congressional calendar. If there's a big vote in a committee, ask your employees to weigh in with their legislators. You know, if it's around an election, which 2012 is right around the corner, there's going to be lots of opportunities to ask them to weigh in at a timely instance. So you need to predict, you need to plan, create a list of actions that your advocates can take to prepare them for this upcoming event. For examples, ask them to blog about your upcoming quarterly sales. Send letters to members of Congress around a President's State of the Union or around an important issue that's going to be discussed on the Hill. And last but not least, the easy part, prepare. Give them all the tools that they need to become involved. Sample letters to members of Congress, background sheets, identify target audience segments. You know, monitor their response, back them up. And lastly, as you recruit, don't forget about your corporate leadership. Senior leadership direction is a critical first step. So often when you get a member of senior leadership to make the ask, to get involved, to become good corporate citizens, to weigh in and become politically active, that goes a long way. Getting buy-in shouldn't be difficult. Any good senior leader sees the value in an accessible advocacy portal through your company. And just as important is peer-to-peer communications. We see it all the time. You're likely to go to a movie because a friend recommends it. You're likely to try a restaurant because it gets rave reviews by your colleagues. So the person next to you is likely to become an advocate if they see that people like me are taking that action. Remember, you get buy-in from the top, everything trickles down. So, moving on to the next step, engagement. So again, your goal is creating this culture of advocacy. You don't want one-and-done actions. You want consistent lifelongers, people that are in for the long haul. You want to keep them informed and engaged, and you want to emphasize to them that it's about this impacts us, not this impacts me. So you can look here across the screen are these kind of the spectrum of engagement involvement activities. First, on your far left, you've got logical interest. These are people that should be engaged, your random company employee, because this affects them. As you move throughout the spectrum, you can see people, committed interest, people that have, you know, maybe signed a petition, they show that they are somewhat interested. You're moving to passive support. These are people who continuously take simple actions, active support. They act more than once. They do stuff at a little bit higher level. Engaged participation. These are your committed. They do almost everything you ask them to do. And then your fervent participators, people who volunteer, take charge, move across the spectrum quickly and consistently. All right. So once you've recruited your employees, you've engaged them, they're all ready to go. Now we move on to the fun part, mobilization. It's just simple. Ask them to do something. And don't forget that prepping them and giving them the tools necessary to become involved is key. Constant communication, steady flow of information. This will keep employees well informed and give them notice of future actions. Prep them. No one likes to come into the office, check their email, and be slammed with an ask. Know that it's coming. Use emails, issue updates, web content to expose advocates to the issues and keep them engaged during the periods when no critical action is required, making it easier to activate them when the need for mobilization arises. All right, so phase one, engaging your employee advocates. The easiest way to engage employees is with the direction from above, like we talked about before. Start with that senior leadership buy-in. Maybe it's enlisting your CEO or a member of senior management to reinforce the importance of mobilization through a letter, through a call to action, through a payroll stuffer, you name it. This can be tied to the political calendar, like we talked about before, reminding them of simple things, getting registered to vote, paying attention to how candidates think on issues, participating in local elections, etc. Part two. Again, fostering this culture of advocacy with persistent outreach to keep everything relevant and moving. A steady drumbeat of news, events, and actions keeps employees informed and provides them with the opportunities to participate. You reach out to them regularly, and often enough, they remain engaged, but not so often, you annoy them. This is meaningful engagement through all delivery channels, email, newsletters, web, content, all channels, to targeted audiences. You can feature an issue, exposing the advocates to and providing them with information about all your company's key issues, laying the groundwork for future action and engagement. You're going to track their affinity. Pay attention to which message resonates with which audience. This will make your job easier in the future when you're doing outreach. And last but not least, don't forget to vary your content. Asking the same thing all the time will go nowhere. Keep things excited. There's a lot of different issues that will impact different people. You just got to figure out what works for who. All right. So, don't forget to work on sustaining this involvement. Give employees a reason to stay connected to the advocacy group. A little recognition goes a long way. As advocates take action, brag about it, advertise it, put a picture in a company newsletter showing one of your employees off. People love to be promoted. Sometimes it just takes a snapshot and a paragraph in a company newsletter. Fostering a team environment is also important. Promotes interaction with your fellow advocates through surveys, social media engagement, peer-to-peer engagement, you name it. This helps them take new action and develop new content. and maybe you incentivize them. Offer employees a half day off on election day to go vote. Give them incentives. You know, anyone who goes and votes gets a T-shirt for the day. People love tchotchkes. Again, this is a cheap way to incentivize folks to get involved. All right. So once you're ready to mobilize, there's a lot of different actions your advocates can take. You can host a town hall at your company's headquarters. You can invite the media. You can keep it closed. There's options there. But sometimes when you open it to media, this creates good press for your company. You can hold a voter registration drive at your work. You can have employees speak at events, Chamber of Commerce meetings, manufacturers events, political rallies, federal government hearings, you name it. Encourage employees to reach out and submit letters to the editor of your local papers. Invite a legislator to your plant or facility. Invite them to have the opportunity to sit down with a group of employees for a high-level discussion on exactly how legislation that's being voted on Capitol Hill impacts his constituents. Variety is key. No one thing will work for any company. Figure out what works best for you and do it all. So a solid advocacy program will be able to utilize a wide range of employees who can address a wide range of issues. Employees can cover issues ranging from taxes to regulation to exploration, you name it. What works for one company may not work for the rest. You guys can decide that, and the employees can decide that for themselves. And ask them to personalize an issue. Often you see companies in our industry attacked on a variety of issues. Ask employees to speak up about what may be incorrect about that attack. You know, how a company addresses their employees on the positive things surrounding an issue or surrounding being an employee of an oil and natural gas industry. So, the impact of effective employee mobilization is limitless. Elected officials and opinion leaders want to hear from real people. It's not about the super lobbyists. I mean, it sometimes is. But for the most part, they want to hear how legislation impacts their constituents, because I may be the best lobbyist in Washington, D.C., but I can't vote for Jean Green. I can't vote for, you know, anyone else across the country. When I worked at the NAM, there was a member of Congress, member of the Senate, and he should have been with us on this issue. I think it was a trade vote. Why he wasn't, we didn't know. And we lobbied him, and he was a holdout. And we needed his vote to ensure passage of this bill. And at the same time, I hosted a series of plant tours in his home state for chiefs of staff, legislative directors, to go into different manufacturing facilities and see how things were made in America. And this senator's chief of staff participated, went into this manufacturing facility, saw things being made, talked about how legislation impacted that plant and the X number of employees. And he looked at me and he said, "You got me. The senator will buy in and he will vote for this bill because we see how it impacts our constituents, our local economy." It's priceless. That means way more than having some hotshot lobbyists go up to the Hill and try to persuade the senator. Now again, sometimes those tactics works too, but why not use what you have? So employee advocacy puts a human face on a complicated issue. It's easy to vote for a piece of legislation when you don't know who it impacts. And by having a constituent make the case, they're the people it impacts. There's your key. Advocates also create a voting block, and elected officials respond to these blocks. I know we're almost out of time. So Let me just jump to my last slide, employee mobilization management. Energy Nation is the voice of the oil and natural gas industry through API. Our mobilization arm impacts corporation and company employees, retirees, contractors, vendors, suppliers on issues critical to our company. With the experience and in knowledge of issues affecting oil and gas business, we develop grassroots programs that elevate these issues with your company and get your employees to care about these issues. Now, I'm sure a lot of you have your own mobilization and public affairs activities that you do, but I'd love to talk to any of you about what we could do as Energy Nation to supplement those activities. I know recently, to bolster an existing grassroots program, a major oil and natural gas company leaned on us to help them carry the message of EPA ozone regulations because it was an issue that they really didn't want to be out front on, but they wanted to support industry. So we helped them. We set up a personalized action page. Employees were encouraged to take action. We didn't push it. We just offered the opportunity. And it was successful. Over, I think it was 3,000 employees became involved, wrote letters, were effective in participating. And it worked. President Obama asked the EPA to back down on this regulation 2 months ago. So again, the opportunities are endless. I'm sure all of you are already doing things, good for you, but I think it's always good to look outside the box and see what else can be done. That's all I have, but any questions, I'm more than happy to take.
Any questions for Tara? Yes, sir.
I've got a quick question for you. I'm a consultant to a lot of different companies, associations, and groups, and we have tried to do these a lot of times, and one of the big hang-ups we get is, well, the lawyers won't approve this because you're in, you know, issues with advocating and getting caught up in ethics and, you know, lobbying, and they just say it's better safe than sorry. And so how do you address that on the front end? And I agree with you, you have to have buy-in from CEO level, because if it just comes from a mid-manager, it's probably not going to have much impact.
Well, it's hard. Working at API, I struggle with the same things, getting the legal to sign off on language for certain alert or, you know, different activities. I go back to my stronghold. There are basic things that citizens are allowed to do. We are allowed to communicate with Congress on issues, you know. And maybe it's just toning down the language a little bit so it's less inflammatory. Sometimes we're like, I came from the NAM where we're always scaring members. We want to be like, this is critical. If you don't get involved now, your house will blow up, you know, like, we were trying to work it. API is very different. We're very much more conservative. Our companies are more conservative. So how do we communicate that? We try to be as unbiased as possible. We try to give a bunch of different messaging. I think a good way to sell senior leadership on it is election year. I mean, the next 11, 12 months are critical. You know, if you don't think the super committee is trying to ding oil and gas, I mean, what will that do? It's hard. You've got to balance it. But I would use the angle of the elections. I would, you know, start with baby steps. Let's do something little. Again, you know, oil and natural gas industry has been a bit slow to advocacy. Not everyone, but as a whole. But we've been pushing them for a long time, a year on this Energy Nation program, and we're just starting to turn the corner. And I think it's because we've sustained it for a year, just little gentle nudges.
Michael.
Michael Keyes, Chesapeake Energy. Just a comment and a question for the panel. What we're finding is that a lot of this is being debated right at the local level, and city councils and others are taking up initiatives to ban hydraulic fracturing in their area. And at these hearings, oftentimes the only people that really show up are the people who are supporting the bans themselves. It's sort of my view, and see how we can do this. a lot of the jobs that we're talking about in this industry are for local folks that are either driving the trucks, working the frack job, doing the water hauling, all of the things that are basically field services operations. They're not field services companies, by and large, are not necessarily in this room. But if we can mobilize the people who have got these jobs and have them come out and not give big speeches, but just talk about what's reality, what they see. People say that we are polluting and dropping chemicals all over the place and, you know, contaminating the environment. People who are actually on the sites themselves can say, look, that's not what happens. We have these procedures that we follow to assure that nothing is spilled. And also can say, look, this is the best job I've had. This is the best opportunity my family has seen in years and years. And, you know, the people who are coming in and saying that we should shut this out, a lot of those people don't live here. And we ought to be talking, local people, talking about how we're going to manage our local economy. So just in terms of bringing the regular common voices to the table, how do you see your initiatives working to do that? How important do you think that is?
Well, I'll just start. You know, API is this big national trade association, and you'll hear from one of my colleagues later today, Linda Rosetta, our vice president of communications, and I think she'll talk about some of the big media and ad buys that we're doing to combat this issue. What my department is doing is much more local. We are going state by state to start with, and then county by county where need be to some of these local hearings, and we're breaking it down. We are working with energy in depth. We are working with oil and gas associations, you know, the state associations. We are working with labor groups. We're working with whoever will work with us to address these on a small time basis, because I'm sorry, the voice of big oil, I mean, that's what who people don't want to hear from, but they want to hear from Joe, you know, who the line worker who depends on this to pay his mortgage. So we're trying to simplify things as much as possible. We're working through Energy Nation, who again is the voice of oil and natural gas for API, the industry. But we also have a couple of different advocacy arms. We have a group called Energy Citizens. They are people who don't consist of industry workers, but they're average citizens who care about energy, that care about the cost of their home heating bills, that care about the cost of the cost at the pump. We have another group called Energy Forums. Those are in different states across the country. Those are kind of grasstop leaders from mayors to veterans to city councilmen who care about this issue. We are leaving no stone unturned. We are reaching out to everyone, including sometimes labor unions, because they care about these high-paying, good jobs that they don't want to see snuffed. So that's kind of what we're doing.
I would also say that it's not just the industry jobs that are created, and there we also have to be careful, because a lot of those industry jobs are non-local people, other states, Texas, Oklahoma, coming into Pennsylvania. So we have to be careful of what jobs we are showcasing, but also the indirect and the induced jobs that occur, from the motel operators to landowner groups. And that's not jobs, that's a landowner issue as well. So if a township decides to vote put a moratoria on drilling or hydraulic fracturing, those landowners need to be there at those meetings and saying, you can't take my land. And that's something that we at Energy in Depth have been trying to organize, is these induced, indirect, and landowner groups.
And just to add from the industry perspective, what Tara said earlier about equipping them with tools, I think that's the key thing, is reassuring them that their stories are important, because I think a lot of them don't feel like one person can move the needle, while many one persons can move the needle. And I think, but, you know, they need to have confidence that the company's behind them and that they can provide them with the, not the speaking points, we don't want scripted speaking points, but the data. If they have to field a question or feel like they may be put in an uncomfortable situation. So I think what Tara was talking about, a toolkit is key to easing their, you know, discomfort with not wanting to step out in front.
It needs to be easy, because, you know, as much as they may care about it, if you don't make it simple, they get caught up in minutia, and, you know, we're all working 8-10 hours a day. I don't necessarily have time to be an engaged citizen, although that's really not an excuse, but I don't, so make it easy.
Any other questions? Yes. Great comment. Any other questions or comments? Seeing no hands, how about a final round of applause for Tara, Jeff, Dan, and Lynn?